About 3 years ago, I was privileged to attend a reunion of the students who had entered Ambassador College from the earliest years. 1947, we had some people there. And then the classes that were from 56, 66, 76, about 30 to 40 years of classes and people who had come and had attended Ambassador College. Many people were hard to recognize because we all aged. And sometimes you had to reach around and look at their little tag to say, "Who are you?" You know, that type of thing. So that's a part of what we went through as well. But it was interesting that a website was created before the reunion. And it continued after the reunion where people could communicate their thoughts and their views on many things, including their years in Ambassador College. I spent over 2 years reading the warm memories and the not so warm memories of some. Some remained faithful to their early beliefs, while others created their own belief system, or as often is said, their own spirituality. A few showed some anger, and some few showed their bitterness after their experiences of the last 50, 60, 40, 30 years of having been in Ambassador College and having been in the Church of God. I was truly sad. I was truly hurt. I was sorrowing over old friends that I had known, some of whom I met there as well, and now know where they are and what they are doing. But it was a very interesting experience. In my search to make some sense of some of this, I did some reading in a place where most people don't go to get a perspective of a man they call the wisest king in the history of Israel. His name was Solomon. So today in the sermon, I'd like to do something a little different. I would like to peruse and to survey a book in the Old Testament that may give us some insights into the mind of this person, that will give us an ability to see where he started out well, but ended up badly because he didn't heed the warning signs. He didn't heed the warning signs. Let's turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 1. I want to go through with you something that I hope will be helpful to you as we evaluate Solomon. Now, a lot of people say, "Yeah, I know what Solomon did. It was written in 4 verses. He had 700 and 300, and they took away his heart, and he went after idols, and that's why he's gone." You want to bet? You want to bet that's not the only reason? I think when we look at the inward workings of the book that was written by Solomon called Ecclesiastes, we will see some very interesting things. 37 times in the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon said, "Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Futilities of futilities, all is futile." Yet only 33 times in all the other books in the Bible totally is the word vanity even used. Why? What is it that brought him to the place that some people thought that he was a candidate for suicide? That was stated years ago, that he was a candidate for suicide in what we see. So this afternoon, what I'd like to do is I'd like to take you through and show you what some people have said about the book of Ecclesiastes, and then show you some areas that will help us understand a broader perspective of this particular man. If you go back to the internet and you put the name Ecclesiastes in and ask for questions, what does it mean? What's it all about? There's one section you might find most interesting. Since it is a copyrighted area, I therefore did not make a copy of it. But it's interesting, a particular section was written by Dr. Charles Swindoll. a religious writer, a man who's written a number of books. He wrote about this on the internet on Ecclesiastes. And he said the following. He said, the book really is divided into five parts. And then he went through and he showed these five parts. I want to show you just simply in a quick overview of what he wrote, something most interesting about this particular setup of this book. Now, when you look at Ecclesiastes, you will find it was not put together until between about 470 B.C. and about 180 B.C. Now, Solomon was long gone. So what we find out is that the people of Ezra and Nehemiah's time, the Masoretes, the scholars, the people that were used to bring about the canonization of the Old Testament, put together Ecclesiastes. Solomon wrote Ecclesiastes, but these men put it together, and they put it together in such a way that it starts out giving you an outline of where he thought, where he went, and where he ended up, and what his final thoughts were. Now, they were the ones that put it together, but he was the one that wrote the thoughts. So we begin to understand the book of Ecclesiastes as you investigate and as you discover, you'll find something very important. Chapter 1 and verses 13 and 14. Notice what it says. Chapter 1, verses 13 and 14. It says, I set my heart to seek out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of men whereby they may be exercised. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. There's no value, he said simply. It is vanity. It is futile. There's nothing to it. Now that's what we see as the basis for the entirety of the book. So when Dr. Swindoll put it together, he said, first of all, we see in chapter 1 the person who was the writer, Solomon. The theme was found in verse 2, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. That's number 2, that's the theme. Then there are questions that come throughout probably the first 12 verses or first 11 verses and the illustrations of what he sees as the problems of what we simply call nature. He sees the nature of the world that is there, and it simply goes around and around and around, and it's like a circle. It comes back to where it was before, over and over and over and over again. This is what he's saying in the first chapter. Now, Dr. Swindoll says the whole concept from verse 1 through 11 is searching nature, looking for answers in nature. Then we come to the second aspect of the book, and that is the personal pursuits. Now we see Solomon move over into chapter 1, verse 12, all the way through to chapter 6 and verse 12. And what he does is he has his personal pursuits. He goes after knowledge. He goes after amusements. He goes after possessions, madness, folly, labor, philosophy, riches, materialism. And he does that for these six chapters as we go from chapter 1, 12, all the way through to about 6, 12. Philosophy and materialism. So what he did was he tried all kinds of different things, and the end result was, again, futility of futilities, he said. The third section that Dr. Swindoll talks about is the conclusion. He's simply saying that from chapter 7, verses 1 through 11, and then up to chapter 11 and verse 6, he said it shows simply, without God's help, humans cannot discover what is good for them to do. Without God's revelation, human beings do not know what's going to come after them. And so we find the third theme here, fatalism and failed relationships. Then we come to number 4 in the book, according to Dr. Swindoll, and he said, it's admonition. Here we said it comes to from chapter 11, verse 7, all the way through to chapter 12 and verse 8. He said it's a warning to you. It's a picture of old age, a final admission of what is going to happen to human beings without God. And he calls that the theology or the admonition that was given. Number five, or the fifth section of this particular book, is called the conclusion. And this has to do with theology from the point of view, it's the end of this search. And he says, fear God and obey him. Someday you will face him. Now, Dr. Swindoll put those together. But Dr. Swindoll did not put together the book of Ecclesiastes, and neither did Solomon. It was put together by the scholars who simply showed a pattern of time. But as you begin to investigate this particular book, you're going to see something very different than perhaps you have looked at before. So I titled this sermon, or sermon Bible study type of thing, Solomon, Ecclesiastes, and You. Because there's a message for us. It's the same message that should have been given way back in 1947, 1956, 1966, 1976, 1986, to all those people who walked through the portals of that building. It's a message that we need to be telling, because it tells us very simply there's something to be learned about this particular man, the wisest man, apparently, who ever lived at that time. We will see a different look at the book of Ecclesiastes. Solomon's reign got off to a good beginning. He recognized his need for God's help and wisdom and guidance and great blessings that came to him as a result of asking simply for the wisdom. But the book of Ecclesiastes gives different evidence of the tragedy that turned his life and took him drifting away from God. What can you learn from his life and this book so that we will not end up shipwrecked like him? Let's look at some areas that perhaps I think have never been looked at in the way that we like to share with you this afternoon in the sermon. Solomon wrote the book of Ecclesiastes, but his age was not given. It was not told how old he was when he wrote this book. But there are several indications the book was written after Solomon was old. All your Jewish historians and many of the scholars believe that he did not write this particular book when he was young or middle age, but when he was old. After he had a chance to live almost 40 years, his reflections are those of an individual who said, vanity of vanities, futility of futility, there's nothing more. If so, was it written before or after he turned away from God? And what was his status at the time he wrote the book? There are indications that will help us understand. The Midrash, which is a Jewish commentary, says that the Song of Solomon was written in his youth. The Song of Solomon was written in his youth. We recognize that it was a young man and his love for a woman. It was at his very early time, his peak of being masculine, being a young man. And so the Song of Solomon was written as a love between this young man and his wife. It was written in his youth. Proverbs, according to the writers, in his middle age. And Ecclesiastes in the evening of his days, according to the Midrash section 10. Internal evidence in the book indicate this. So let's go back to 1 Kings for just a moment. 1 Kings chapter 2. We want to read something in 1 Kings chapter 2 to lay the foundation for the rest of the sermon today. This is 1 Kings chapter 2 and verse 1. In 1 Kings chapter 2 and verse 1, we see Solomon being exhorted by David to be faithful to the laws of God so that he would be a successful ruler. Let's notice chapter 2 and verse 1. And so the days of David drew near that he should die, and he charged Solomon his son, saying, I go the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and prove yourself a man. Keep the charge of the Lord your God, and walk in his ways. Keep his statutes, his commandments, his judgments, his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn, that the Lord may fulfill his word which he spoke concerning me. If your sons take heed to their ways to walk before me in truth with all of their hearts and with all of their soul, he said, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. We see the first exhortation in 1 Kings chapter 3. Let's go over there for just a moment. This is 1 Kings chapter 3. Notice how Solomon begins. Chapter 3, where it tells us that the Lord appeared to Solomon, beginning in verse 5. And Solomon talks about how his father had been shown great mercy and how he has been shown great mercy. And verse 7, it says, now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David. But I am a little child. I do not know how to go out or how to come in. If you start here, you're going to see something important. He had a low opinion of himself. He did not have the pompous arrogance as he talked to God about his needs. And he said simply, I do not know how to go in and go out. And your servant is in the midst of your people whom you have chosen, a great people, two numbers to be numbered or counted. Therefore, give your servant an understanding or a hearing heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours? When you are humble, there is a way by which God will talk to you. He'll show you by his word, by examples, by circumstances, certain particular things. And this is how God offered Solomon anything he wished. And God was pleased that Solomon requested wisdom. And then he added riches and honor to the gift, as we see through the rest of this particular chapter. He became the wisest man in the whole earth. And leaders from all the world came to hear and to counsel with him. Solomon reigned 40 years. He started out well. He stayed close to God for a number of years. But in the latter years of his life and of his reign, he turned away from God. And there are things within the book of Ecclesiastes and other places that tell us what actually happened. 1 Kings chapter 11. 1 Kings chapter 11 and verse 4. Let's notice 1 Kings 11 and verse 4. Solomon talked about having loved many foreign women as well as the daughter of Pharaoh. Verse 4, and it was so when Solomon was old that his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not at peace. That's the translation from the Hebrew. His heart was not at peace or loyal to God, as was the heart of his father David. Verse 9, and so the Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned from the Lord God. He was not loyal any longer. He took upon himself with his own pompous arrogance and his pride to think that he could understand all these things a whole lot better, and the end result was, what goes around comes around, and you reap what you sow. The law is just as perfect as it can be. What goes around comes around. It just does. And this is what happened to Solomon in his latter years, as we see. There's an indication as to how and when this did happen. We notice, if you keep in your notes, something important. From chapter 3, verses 5 through 14, when God talked with Solomon, and then up to chapter 11, verses 1 through 9, something has happened. Things began to deteriorate. Things began to fall away. Things began to slide. Things began to move away from a foundational concept that the man held because he decided to do certain things. Now, let's just take a little bit of information. Solomon's construction projects, just for a moment. He started the temple in the fourth year of his reign. He finished it in the 11th year of his reign. And he dedicated the temple in the 12th year of his reign. Keep that in mind, 12 years, okay? Then you come down to the concept that it must have been still a time when Solomon was humble, because his humbling and inspiring dedication prayer indicates that he was still faithful to God at that time. It was a beautiful prayer. It was a wonderful prayer. He's 12 years into his rulership, and you could see still that he was with God, and his frame of mind was awesome. in the dedication of this temple. And then after he finished with the temple, there was, after the completing of the temple, Solomon began to construct several magnificent buildings, one for himself, as well as one for one of his many wives, the daughter of Pharaoh. Now, you can read that for yourself in chapter 7 of the book of 1 Kings. These buildings, according to 1 Kings chapter 7 and verse 1, took 13 years, taking Solomon into the 24th year of his reign. So you see now that 24 of the 40 years that he reigned have gone by. You wonder if all of this construction kept him busy and kept his mind from idolatry. Then we look at 1 Kings chapter 9 and we see something interesting. Let's turn there and read just a little bit from 1 Kings chapter 9 verses 4 through 7. Is a statement that is made and you say, well, it doesn't really say anything more than what God said to David before, but I think you have to come back and realize that he makes this statement in this particular case after 12 years of the temple and 11 years or 13 years of building the other buildings, or 24 years. God appears to him and he begins to reiterate something. My question to you is, had Solomon begun to drift from God by this time? Because the Lord appeared to Solomon a second time after these primary construction projects. Notice what he says. Now, verse 4, now if you walk before me as your father David walked. Verse 5, then I will. Notice verse 6, but if you or your sons do not. Verse 7, then I will cut off Israel from the land. So we ask the question, had God begun to see the beginning of a spiritual drift in Solomon's life? Or had God foreseen the potential for Solomon to be pulled away? There seems to be warning in these words. But if you do not, then I will. These words aren't new. But God spoke them to David, and David spoke them to Solomon, but God chose to repeat them personally to Solomon at this time. Why? Why? God gives us warnings. He gives us warnings. As we start to drift, as we start to slide, as we start to let go of certain things, He gives us warning. People ultimately become dull of hearing, according to Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 11. And Solomon had gone through these 24 years, and now he was beginning to show a dullness. He wasn't paying attention to certain things. Why? Why? There's an answer to that. Chapter 10, over in 1 Kings. Chapter 10 speaks of the tremendous wealth of the gold and the silver that Solomon had accumulated, and also how he had imported horses and chariots to supplement his military capabilities. Why? Why did he do that? Immediately after, in chapter 11, it tells of them bringing all these wives and concubines into his life and his heart being turned away from God. Now, God prophesied the kings would be among Abraham's descendants. At some point, God inspired instruction for the conduct of kings. Let's go over to Deuteronomy chapter 17 for a moment. I want you to notice something. There are four interesting principles that are given. What happened to Solomon? This is chapter 17, beginning in verse 14. Chapter 17. And verse 14, it says, when you come into the land which the Lord your God is giving you, and possess it and dwell in it, and say, I will set a king over me like all the nations that are around me. You shall surely set a king over you whom the Lord your God chooses. Okay, that's the first thing we see. Solomon was chosen, one from among the brethren. Very important to realize that he is a part of those people. He walks with them. It's kind of like in the sermonette we talked about, the intertwining, the working together. And it was a man who was a part of those people. Your king would be one from among your brethren. You shall set as king over you. You should not set a foreigner over you who is not your brother. Verse 16. But he shall not multiply horses for himself. Whoa. Wait a minute. This particular section of the scripture is to be read by the king every day. And it says, he shall not multiply horses for himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt to multiply horses. For the Lord has said to you, you shall not return that way again. Verse 17, neither shall he multiply wives for himself, lest his heart turn away, nor shall he greatly multiply silver and gold for himself. These are the words that were given so that kings would be instructed day by day. And when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, he shall write for himself a copy of this law in a book. He not only read it, but he was to write it from one before the priest, the Levites. It shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God and be careful to observe all the words of this law and these statutes. Verse 20, that his heart may not be lifted up. If you have a margin, it says, become proud. Become proud. And so he tells us here that his heart be not become proud, lifted up above his brethren, that he may not turn aside from the commandment to the right hand, to the left, that he may prolong his days in his kingdom and his children in the midst of Israel. Here we see God-inspired instruction here in Deuteronomy 17. Read the law daily. He should not multiply horses building up his military. He is against accruing personal wealth. And fourthly, specifically against taking multiple wives. And verse 20 simply says that his heart was not to become proud. Somewhere in all of this you got drift. Somewhere in all of this, he raised himself up. Somewhere in all of this, he thought more highly of himself than he ought to. Solomon had the instructions to keep him faithful. Somewhere along the way, he stopped following it. And the foreign wives then were able to turn him away from God and his laws. Let's continue with some of the events. Let's go over to Ecclesiastes and look through several examples here in the book of Ecclesiastes, starting in chapter 2. We begin to see something here that Solomon relates a number of experiments, and he was beginning to search for a deeper meaning in life. Now remember, the book of Ecclesiastes was written and then it was put together by the Masoretes, the people of Ezra and Nehemiah's day, and it was showing all the things that Solomon was doing and the reactions from them. Here in chapter 2 and verse 4, it simply says, I made my works great. I built myself houses and planted myself vineyards. So he began to do things and experiment. Notice in verse 1 of chapter 2, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure. But surely this was also futility. I said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their life. And he experimented. He was looking for a deeper meaning in life. Then he talked about how he built great works in verse 5. Itself in verse 4 and 5, he built a vineyard, he planted gardens and orchards. And all of these projects, as you begin to see them unfold, would require a number of years, such as an orchard, to develop and bring it into production. All of this was written after these projects. So we begin to understand that we're getting to the fact that he was old. And if he was old when he wrote Ecclesiastes, is it possible that maybe he learned from all of this in his last days and then wrote this book? It seems highly unlikely. For there is no record of him ever repenting. But yet there are records of several evil kings in Israel who did repent and who did walk softly and who did humble themselves from the arrogance and the pride that they had. So we see these things fitting into understanding this particular man with wisdom and yet the inability to understand some of the foundational things he should have been standing on. In the last two chapters of Ecclesiastes, he advised young men to remember now your Creator in the days of your youth before the physical body is worn out and the life is about over. This sounds very much like advice coming from someone whose life was at its end or mostly behind him. So what's the message of the book? What's the message of the book? Is Solomon sharing his quest for the meaning of life and how he found it? There are too many negative statements, brethren, in Ecclesiastes. It was how Solomon ultimately felt at the end of his life. He really, if you look at it, was a failure because he didn't follow the basic things of Deuteronomy 17. He didn't follow the principles of putting away from his heart the desire to be proud, to rise up above his brethren. The new Bible commentary says that it's a difficult book to understand. But others like author R.K. Harrison in the introduction to the Old Testament says the following. He said, it presents an excursus on the futility of existence, a theme that may well have occupied the mind of historic Solomon toward the close of his life. Interesting. Interesting. Solomon speaks of the emptiness of life. Let's go over to chapter 1 for just a moment and look at verses 2 and 3. Notice what he says. I think it begins to show you that here he was. He's a candidate for some very serious mental and emotional problems. A candidate for those things. Notice verse 2. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? So we see the futility, the meaningless of life is a prevailing theme in several chapters. And Solomon yet was supposed to be noted for being associated with wisdom. But notice chapter 1 and verse 17. Chapter 1 and verse 17. I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and to know folly. And I perceive this is also a grasping for the wind. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. Here Solomon before had extolled the virtues and the benefits of wisdom. Now he disparages it. Now he disparages it. What he had found and experienced was not working for him any longer. Why? Solomon seems to have realized in his old age that those things are not as satisfying and as rewarding as he once thought they would be. It is what I describe as the law of diminishing returns. The physical does not satisfy for very long. It was the law of diminishing returns. The physical did not satisfy for very long. Notice chapter 2 and verse 11. For just a moment. Chapter 2 and verse 11. He said, I looked on all the works that my hand had done and on the labor which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and a grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. Like people in the twilight of years reflect on what they had accomplished or had learned. This happened to Solomon. Yet Solomon wrote in his middle age an interesting statement found in Proverbs 10 and verse 22. Keep your finger here in Ecclesiastes. Let's go back to Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 22. Notice what he says in his middle age, not in his old age, as we read here in Ecclesiastes 2:11. This is Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 22. Notice the statement that is made. The blessing of the Lord makes one rich. He adds no sorrow with it. This was written in his middle age. I believe the Jewish writers, the scholars, the people who put together the canon of the Old Testament, they actually saw Proverbs as being a part of the middle of his life. And so it simply said, the blessing of the Lord, this is his quote, makes one rich. He adds no sorrow with it. Yet when you read over in Ecclesiastes 2, you see Solomon's statement simply saying to us that, you know, there's no profit. That it's like grasping after wind. And it shouldn't have been that way for him. Solomon considered the conclusion of his life to be a little different than that of a fool. Life was no longer enjoyable or rewarding. It tells us here that he actually hated life. Let's notice a couple of statements in this particular section. Verse 14. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yet I myself perceived that the same event happens to them all. So I said in my heart, so happens to the fool, it also happens to me. And why was I then more wise? And I said in my heart, this is also vanity. The last part of verse 16, how does a wise man die? As a fool. Verse 17, therefore I hated life, because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me. Verse 18, I hated all my labor. And he talks about in verse 20, therefore I turned my heart and despaired. Verse 21, this also is vanity and a great evil. And then the last part of verse 26, this is also vanity and a grasping for wind. So you see something has happened to the man. You see that he's come to a great discouragement. Job came to feel the same way as Solomon. But he later repented of such thoughts. And he went on to enjoy many, many years of abundant life. You read that over in Job 42. I have heard of you by the hearing of my ears. My eye now sees you. I repent, seeing I am dust and ashes. And the Lord then blessed him and brought to him more abundance than he had even before. But the point was that Job repented. Solomon didn't. He just continued to drift. And all these things became a plague on him. And all the frame of mind was just simply what you see when he said he hated life. So we recognize Solomon laments that he would have to leave all these things. And he realized that these things didn't make any difference anyway because they were vanity and frustration. Let's go to Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and verse 18. Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 18. He said, I hated all my labor in which I toiled under the sun because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool. Yet he will rule over all my labor which I toiled and which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This is also vanity. And he simply said, therefore I turned my heart in despair of all the labor which I had done under the sun. Now, when you think about this for just a moment, you realize that Solomon wrote something else. He said very simply in the book of Proverbs these words, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. And here he is talking here about leaving it to whether the person is a wise man or a fool. I don't know about you, but I think about what I leave my children and what we leave our children's children and how important it is to us because it is the good that we want to pass on to them. Yet Solomon laments that he will have to leave all his possessions to his children. And it wasn't a wonderful idea. Chapter 7, verse 1. You begin to understand how negative this particular situation is. I remember about 40 years ago, Feast of Tabernacles, one of the ministers gave a whole sermon on the book of Ecclesiastes and how it didn't satisfy and how it didn't have answers and all of these things. And when it was all done, I walked out of the services that day and I was so stinking depressed that I had to sit through that sermon because the sermon didn't leave me with anything. But I began to realize as I've read over these last few years, and especially recently after I went through the situation that I talked about at the beginning of the sermon, I realized that there was something that didn't happen to go right for this man. He forgot Deuteronomy 17. He forgot about being humble. He forgot about remembering the fact that there was a certain way to live life. Notice chapter 7 and verse 1. He said, a good name is better than a precious anointment. A good name is better than precious anointment. And the day of death than the day of one's birth. Better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting. And sorrow is made better than laughter. By sad countenance the heart is made better. I mean, you begin to see Solomon talked about the day of his death being better than the day of one's birth. Is that the way we should feel about birth and death? Or is this a reflection of Solomon's state of mind at this point in his life? In chapter 3, let's go back there for just a moment. Chapter 3, it talks about what we see here as the cycles of life and life's experiences. There are things that Solomon has learned. Verse 1 of chapter 3. To everything there is a season and a time for every purpose. And he goes down and talks about a time to be born, a time to die, etc. But he drops down to verse 9. It says, what profit has the worker from that in which he labors? I have seen the God-given task to which the sons of men are to be occupied. He, that is God, made everything beautiful in its own time. He has put eternity in their hearts. Man strives to understand the word forever. He strives to understand the word eternal. Man can't see beyond the physical. But he said he put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from the beginning to the end. We do. We understand. We recognize that God is reproducing himself. We recognize that God is a family. And yet with Solomon, look what happened when all these things came to pass. This is the frame of mind that he finally came to. And things that he had learned, and now he questions. Of all of life's forms, only man thinks about eternity. Only man thinks about eternity. Is Solomon saying that there is nothing better than to enjoy the few pleasures of life? Or was he looking back in sorrow at how he had failed? The context of the book says the latter. The context of the book says he looked back in sadness as to how he failed. Even in the last chapter of Ecclesiastes, verse 8 of chapter 12, he says, all is vanity. What's it like to turn away from a relationship with God? What's it like? You think about that. That's what Solomon had done. This is what left him feeling utterly empty. God had come to Solomon a second time, as we saw in the early reading of the sermon. But Solomon's wisdom remained with him. And for a while, God continued to use Solomon to teach people the value of knowledge and the lesson he had learned. There seems to be a mix of great words of wisdom and the reflections of his state of mind. It's kind of like the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And Christ speaks about that particular frame of mind where he says that some will be filled with anger, while others will be filled with sadness and regret when it comes to the time of the resurrection, when it comes to the time of the day of judgment. Christ talked about the gnashing, weeping and gnashing of teeth, and the fact that some people would be angry and some people would be extremely sad. Let's ask the question, is this what we are seeing in the book of Ecclesiastes, a regret for what might have been and could have been? The Bible contains both good and bad examples to learn from. And I think we're seeing, when we look at Ecclesiastes, an understanding of a man who drifted, a man who didn't pay attention to those things that should have been. We recognize that at the end of life there are reflections. We recognize that Solomon at this point in his life, he was surrounded by 1,000 women. And yet he was unable to experience and enjoy intimate love with one woman as God had intended. I want to show you something over in the seventh chapter. I find this profound. I find this almost unbelievable when I read starting in verse 26. This is verse 26 through verse 28. This is amazing. This is amazing. Look at what it says. I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets. Yeah, 1,000 of them. No, I won't say anymore. I better leave it right there. Whose hands are fetters. He who escapes pleases God. He who pleases God shall escape from her. But the sinner shall be trapped by her. Here's what I found, says the preacher, adding one thing to another to find out the reason. With my soul I still seek, but I cannot find. One man in 1,000 I have found, but a woman among all these I have not found. Amazing. Amazing. You come to realize that this is where Solomon was after he was surrounded by 1,000 women and yet unable to experience the joys and the intimacies with one wife as God has intended. Now Solomon is finding out not just by one her, but by 1,000. And I do believe he realizes his life has been ruined and his future is behind him because he gave in to his destructive desires and personal weaknesses. He should have remembered Deuteronomy 17. He should have listened to what it said there. And you know what? He would have been a totally different man. He would have had a totally different outlook. The book of Ecclesiastes seems to be the reflections of a man who realizes that he has failed. He has blown his opportunity in life. And he wants to share some tremendously important lessons he's learned to help others not make the same mistakes. You and I are hearing that today. You are being witnessed to today about the book of Ecclesiastes that you may never have heard before. You think about it. Oh, you've heard part about his wives turned his heart away. And we all go back to that one particular point. But look at all the other things we talked about in the sermon today. Chapter 4 and verse 13. Chapter 4 and verse 13. He makes a statement here that I think is interesting in what I call the end of life reflections. Chapter 4 and verse 13. Better a poor and wise youth than an old and foolish king who will be admonished no more. I remember the statement that was made to me in 1982 by someone. He said, there's no fool like an old fool. There's no fool like an old fool. Elihu said it to Job in chapter 32. He said, old men aren't always so wise. I do believe he was talking about himself. I do believe that better a poor and wise youth than an old and foolish king who will be admonished no more. I think he's describing himself because he admonishes the youth as well in chapter 11. Let's go over there for just a moment. Chapter 11 and verse 9. Verse 9 and 10. Notice chapter 11 of the book of Ecclesiastes in verses 9 and 10. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes, but know that for all these God will bring you into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart. Put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. Chapter 12 and verse 1. Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come and the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. The rest of that talks about, if you read it in the Amplified version of the Bible, you will find is talking about all the things that happened to you as you begin to grow old. The eyes, the ears, the taste, the teeth that begin to go, all these things. And he said to the young man, remember now, because in all due respect, he didn't do it right. And he wants someone else to know that this is very important. So, what's the conclusion to the sermon? It's not so much how you begin a journey. It's how you finish it. It's not how you begin, it's how you finish. It's not as important as how you begin a race. It's how you finish it. I mean, these are the things that Christ taught us in the New Testament. This man was told in the Old Testament what he should be doing. You and I are being told what we should be doing. Solomon was praised at the beginning of his reign. Now he's surrounded by bickering wives and power struggles among his sons, men who want his throne and his crown as he ages. Maybe he asked himself, is this all there is? Is this all there is? I again saw that for all the toil and every skillful work, a man is envied by his neighbor. He said, this is also vanity and a grasping for wind. And again, you see that frame of mind. Here we have a message of a man who began his journey with God, but he began it well, but failed to finish it as he should have. All's well that ends well. Sadly, it seems his journey didn't. There are two verses I want to share with you, because in this book are many wonderful truths in this book of what I call wisdom. But John and Luke sum it up very well. I'm going to read them both to you. You don't have to turn to them. This is 2 John 1 and verse 8. Here's what the Apostle John said. Look to yourselves that we do not lose these things we have worked for, but that we may receive a full reward. Solomon had it. He lost it. And he's telling you why. And he's hoping you'll understand. Jesus Christ inspired Luke to write the following. For what profit is for a man if he gains the whole world and is himself destroyed or lost? Two simple scriptures from the New Testament. A story in Ecclesiastes that maybe you haven't looked at that way before. But it's there. The reality of it is there. Something for us in our older years in the Church of God to take heed to. You and I have been entrusted with a great treasure. We must see that it never slips from our hands. Read Ecclesiastes from that point of view. Hopefully, it will help you to understand what it means for Solomon, Ecclesiastes, and you.